Leslie! Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This is episode number 110. It is me, Richie T, and look who it is, DJ Rob.
Hey, look, it's me.
Hey,
what can
look.
You do?
What can you do?
What can you do? Look at me.
Episode 110, it's going to be kind of a hybrid episode.
Okay, so we got like a couple of different things we're putting together here.
Yeah, that's what would be a hybrid would be. So,
okay. Do they have any relation to each other?
They're both authors.
Okay, so it's more of a compilation.
Yeah.
Not a hybrid.
No, a hybrid because it's two into one episode. That's where I got hybrid. Compilation would be like, I guess the same thing.
Sure.
But maybe
I'm thinking hybrid, you got like, one's a story about a doctor, one's a story about an author.
Put them together and they're Doc Author.
Doc Author, exactly.
Hybrid. Your latest Spider-Man villain.
Ooh.
Doc Author.
Kind of boring.
No? Not a great...
I'm a lawyer who combines with
I'm
a
going
park
with
ranger.
Okay, and what do they become? A LaRanger?
Poyer.
A Poyer?
A Poyer.
Oh, he sounds exciting. Tell me what. Tell me how that's better than a Doc Author.
I know nothing.
No, it's not.
Okay.
But bless your heart. Thank you for trying.
Oh.
We
want to hear your stories about when people say bless your heart.
Yes.
Email us at the Cultural Hall.
So the two different authors, one of them is Michael G. Reed. He talks about how the LDS folk have banned the cross.
Okay.
His book is called Banishing the Cross. He talks
Banishing
about
the cross.
Why Mormon folk, why we don't have the cross.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a very interesting thing because people are like, well, you're not Christian. You don't have any crosses in your churches.
Right. So he talks all about that, talks about how it used to not be the case, talks about why he thinks that it has gone that way, and his future, he looks into the future as what he thinks the LDS church will do with crosses. So pretty fascinating.
And that's always the thing because people are like, well, I don't worship the thing that killed Christ.
I don't worship the death. I worship the life.
Right.
Yep. Then the second author is Jana Reese, who works for the Religion News Service and also recently authored The Twible. We talked about that in the Articles of News a couple of weeks ago. It's each chapter of the Bible in 140 characters or less.
The Twitter Bible.
Yeah, the Twitter Bible. It's a Twible.
The Twible.
I asked her about the Twormen, which I've now copyrighted.
You have?
Yeah. I told her I copyrighted it, so I need to further that.
Yeah, you need to further that. She's listening to this episode going, too bad, yoink. Yep.
And also the Doctrine and Covenants,
which
I own.
Yeah, you don't own. You own in your head.
I own in my head. It was my idea.
Twotwol how?
It's the Twotwol Twal. Not good.
Twisted.
So that's all coming up in the second and third blocks, respectively. I want to share this.
Respect.
And then let's be done, because those interviews are good and long. They're hearty episodes.
Yeah, you know, folks, we don't want to keep you over than an hour during your week while you're working and slaving away on that treadmill or at your desk.
Yeah.
Or driving to work.
Or you're a lot of people listen on the road trip. A lot of people do road trip listening. Here's what I think is absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
There are, and I'm curious who this is, so please get in touch with us at theculturalhall.com. Contact us, or you can get us on Twitter or whatever. There is a contingent of people who now listen in South Korea, like a sizable amount of web hits coming from South Korea. I hope that it's not just spam or something like that.
At least it's not North Korea.
Right. But a sizable amount of people coming to the Cultural Hall from South Korea. So if that's you, if you think
email
I
us.
Live in South Korea and I go to the Cultural Hall a lot, I'd be curious as to know how you found out about it and what you're doing in South Korea.
Sizable amount, like five?
No, like hundreds.
What?
Yeah.
What is going on here?
Right? Is it bad that I always think that my first thought went to it might be spam?
Yeah, it could be spam. There is a, you know, military base out there. Maybe lots of Mormons at the military base.
That could very well be.
Or maybe.
What?
There are missionaries saying, to improve your English, listen to the Cultural Hall.
Boy, I hope not.
Listen to how Rob puts his foot in his mouth and Richie T screams. I don't know.
I'm trying to see if I can. So today,
okay. Yes.
For example, United States number one.
Yes.
South Korea number two.
What? As in countries?
As in countries who have hit the Cultural Hall, right?
So what's the number three country?
Today, it's Canada.
Oh, Canada.
But like yesterday, it was United States, South Korea. Then we had, this is cool. This is kind of a fun list.
Okay.
United States, South Korea, Canada, Australia, Bangladesh, Estonia, France, Netherlands, New Zealand, Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
That's our top 10. I want to share this review from iTunes. Encourage you to go and make a review on iTunes if that's how you get it. If you get the Cultural Hall other ways, let us know how you find it and leave reviews there. That always helps us. This is from Tom in Vegas. Says, love the format of the podcast that alternates between weekly news wrap-ups and interesting interviews regarding the culture of Mormonism. It has great hosts that are energetic and interesting. My wife and I both listen, and many conversations have been sparked because of what has been discussed on the podcast. In fact, it is often our first source of info when it comes to Mormon-related news. I also enjoy the peeks into their personal lives. Their stories often normalize the difficulties and humor of living the gospel in today's environment. So, Richie and the gang, please continue to entertain and enlighten us listeners, and thank you for all your work.
You're welcome.
Now you can hear our work. It's the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
Ring!
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Are you looking for meaningful Christmas gifts for your friends and family? LDSBookstore.com is your one-stop shop for everything LDS. We carry quality products for all ages, including beautiful framed art, inspiring books, fun accessories, inviting home decor, and more. Give a gift this year that is truly one of a kind with our affordable customization options like ring engraving, scripture embossing, and even custom temple art. We make shopping online simple, hassle-free, and easy on your wallet. Your order will be handled with care, and you'll love our friendly customer service. Do all your Christmas shopping this year at LDSBookstore.com and use coupon code RADIO to get free shipping. That's LDSBookstore.com and use coupon code RADIO for free shipping.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it is a special episode of the Cultural Hall. On the phone with me from all the way from Berkeley, California. What? It's Michael G. Reed. Which, by the way, that's a good apostolic name. By the way, what's the G stand for?
Glenn.
Glenn. So yeah, you're going the right way with the apostolic name because you couldn't do M. Glenn Reed. That's not as good. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Sounded like I lost you there for a second. He is the author of the book "Banishing the Cross: The Emergence of a Mormon Taboo." I almost said tattoo for a second.
That'd be definitely taboo.
Yeah, that's a whole different kind of thing. Thanks for being here in the Cultural Hall with us. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I was raised in the church. I have pioneer ancestry on all sides.
Now, when you say the church, when you say the church, I assume the LDS church.
LDS church.
Okay.
Yeah, I served a mission in Baltimore, Maryland, and I am in history.
I'm losing you back and forth. Is your phone?
It could be cutting out. Sorry
yeah.
About that.
No, you're fine. I got you from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yes, I am. I served a mission in Baltimore, Maryland, and I am currently pursuing a PhD in Christian history at the Graduate Theology. And for my master's thesis, I wrote a book on the cross taboo, the development of LDS attitudes towards it, or towards the symbol of the cross. And my master's thesis got some media attention, and it has since been published through John Whitmer Books.
So let's talk about it then. You said you served a mission. You kind of make it sound as though your church attendance is sort of past tense. Is that so? Is your LDSisms a thing of the past?
No. I guess you could say I'm fairly active.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily an Orthodox Mormon, but yes, I attended yesterday.
Nice.
On Sunday, and I was with my kids there, and it was testimony meeting, and I even bore my testimony.
Oh,
so
nice.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah, no. I don't mean to pry, nor does it qualify one way or another, but I know that a lot of people are like, yeah, but what does it mean? Is he, you know, is this someone coming from the other side, or is this someone from within, or, you know, I think the people...
I'm a bit agnostic about a lot of things that might be foundational to the church's lanes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I still identify myself with culture, and I embrace my heritage, and I enjoy the fellowship.
Are there names in your heritage that we'd go, oh, I know who that is, or oh, that movie's about him, or you know, those type of pioneer stock?
Oh, Benjamin F. Johnson and Joel Johnson.
Okay,
they were brothers. Interestingly, one's on my mother's side and one's on my father's.
Oh, really?
So my parents are distant cousins. Yes, and I guess Azale Smith, who was Joseph Smith's grandfather, he's a common ancestor.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So yeah.
So
and my yeah.
Well, I really want to get into this because this is something that has absolutely fascinated me about Mormonism, the idea of the cross. Because I think that if you say, you know, how come Mormons don't wear the cross? I think that the standard thing that you will get from members of the LDS Church is that they will say, well, we celebrate the life, not the death of Christ.
Right.
Right? Is that pretty fair in the attitude?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much assumed also that that the symbol is somehow contrary to the faith of Mormonism, that it's a symbol of, that's an apostate symbol.
Okay.
But yeah, this idea that Jesus is alive, well, there's plenty of death symbolism in the LDS Church that is acceptable in the temple, to be explicit. But yeah, it's there are symbols in the temple referring to instruments that Jesus was crucified with.
Sure.
And then of course the sacrament is symbolic of Jesus' death. And so it doesn't really make much sense to me, or it didn't make much sense to me when I first began my research. And so, yeah, it just seems like it's an explanation that Mormons have come up with that seems to provide an answer, but it's kind of a radicalization that has been invented
nice.
In Mormonism. It doesn't really explain the actual basis for the taboo in Mormon culture.
So as you started to research this then for your master's thesis and everything, what did you come up with? What's the missing part? What are we missing here? Your phone's all over the place. Do you have a landline I can call you on or something like that?
I don't. That's what I was hoping. Maybe we can do Skype.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can give it a shot. I'll just ask you to repeat back this stuff when we miss you. So master's thesis.
Okay.
What did you discover?
I tried to find the earliest negative attitudes toward the symbol in Mormon culture. And it was very late. I couldn't find much of anything, and I couldn't find anything at all in early Mormon. The earliest negative statement towards the symbol it was that I was able to find dated 1877, and then a couple more around 1881 and 1882.
So those accounts in 1877 and 81 and 82, what are they in reference to, or what do they say about it?
Yeah, they're in reference to Catholicism, and they're these negative statements also have anti-Catholic rhetoric laced with them. And so one even says that it's the mark of the beast.
Oh, really?
The cross. Yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, we find that later on in McConkie's Mormon Doctrine, where he refers the sign of the cross to be the mark of the beast. But while I was doing my research, I stumbled across information on the church actually petitioning the Salt Lake City Council in 1916 to erect a cross monument on Ensign Peak to honor the Mormon pioneers who were then dying off, and to also make the statements, you know, we're Christian too, to the rest of the world. And I was very taken back by that. And so I realized, you know, there must be something more to this story. Why would the church... why would the church do such a thing? And so I started sifting through, not just looking for negative statements about the cross, but just about statements in general about the symbol. And I found many positive ideas that were circulated and promoted by early saints. And then I turned to a material culture. I was sifting through early Mormon photographs, and I found out, I found photographs such as Amelia Folsom Young, who is one of Brigham Young's polygamous wives,
mm-hmm.
Wearing a big cross brooch. And I found a number of different photographs of Brigham Young's daughters wearing cross earrings or necklaces. And so, yeah.
So is
it really snowballed from there.
Is it to be assumed then that in the early days, like in the time of Joseph Smith and in the time of Brigham Young, that the cross was pretty readily visible within all members of the church? And churches in general?
Yeah, it wasn't a terribly popular symbol, but as far as the taboo, it doesn't seem to have existed. Yeah, we find positive commentary. We find Latter-day Saints turning to archaeological discoveries and pre-Columbian remains where archaeologists report crosses being found in, say, the Mayan ruins or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to Latter-day Saints, this is evidence that there was Christianity and that this had some, that these discoveries had somehow validated the authenticity of the Book of Mormon.
So,
of course, yeah.
Oh, no, but, go ahead.
Then also the church's involvement with Freemasonry. To be a Mason, but then to also be anti-symbol, a certain symbol, that's kind of an oxymoron. Because Freemasonry is all about symbolism. It's the science of symbolism.
Well, and it always seems funny to me. It always seems funny to me when people that I've talked to are like, you know, well, we don't worship symbols or you know, things like that. And when they're talking about the cross, it's like, oh, well, we don't, you know, we don't have these worship for symbols. How do you like my CTR ring?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm fine if people. You know, they go, the cross, it's, you know, it's not something I choose to wear or whatever. But when people are trying to tell me, you know, we don't worship these symbols or we don't, you know, we don't put value into these symbols or these emblems or anything like that. And then turn around and are like, and look at my CTR ring, look at my infinity ring, look at, you know, this kind of stuff. It's like, no, it's the same thing. You just have not just chosen the cross as your symbol for doing it.
Right, right. Or you know, there's this. As you had already said, you know, this association with death for the symbol of the cross. And there's this idea that it shouldn't be used because we believe that Jesus is still alive and ministry continues. But then Latter-day Saints tour Carthage Jail and have spiritual or claim and treat it as sacred space, claim to have spiritual experiences there.
Mm-hmm.
So
I want to go back to it a little bit. You mentioned it, and I have never heard about the cross up on Ensign Peak. So they petitioned the Salt Lake City to do it, and Salt Lake said, no, we won't do it, or was it?
Well, it was a controversy because it was public property, and so it was a separation of church and state issue.
In
and
Utah?
So, in Utah, yeah, I know. Yeah, and so there was a public backlash among non-members and as well as members saying that the cross shouldn't be there because it's public property. But then there were also those who were saying that it shouldn't be used at all because it's a Catholic symbol and that by using this as a monument, we might deceive the world in thinking that this is a Catholic state, that Utah is a Catholic state. And then Mormons who were pushing this monument idea would respond by saying, but this is a symbol of not just Mormonism, but all of Christianity. It's very pluralistic. And then there was a Jewish population that objected against it, saying, actually, it's not one of our symbols.
Yeah.
And so they joined the controversy as well. And eventually, this went to trial, and the church lost. And the proposal failed, and the church then had to pay court fees and all that. And since then, the church has erected an obelisk, or an obelisk instead, on Ensign Peak.
Which essentially is just a big, like, a Washington Monument kind of looking thing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The pointed pillar, yeah.
Yeah. Or obelisk, for those who know exactly what that is. I like to dumb it down for me.
Okay.
So then where does that whole thing come from then? Because up to even 1917, I'm hearing, all right, we were at least, you know, back and forth on the issue of it. Is it with Elder McConkie and the Mark of the Beast? Is that where we kind of get it?
Well, it started at the grassroots level at the turn of the 20th century, so around 1900 to 1920, excuse me. And so that started at the grassroots level, and it also paralleled the new Catholic presence in the state of Utah, and so it appears to have been related to tension with Catholicism, a fear of Catholicism, a fear that Catholics are going to try and take over the state. And so, but it wasn't, as you had said, there was this back and forth position among members, and it wasn't until 1957 that David O. McKay institutionalized the taboo.
By saying and doing what?
Bishop Worthlin, presiding bishop of the church, he contacted David O. McKay and asked him what the position of the church is regarding the wearing of cross jewelry. The store that was apparently pushing these cross necklaces or trying to sell these cross necklaces to Latter-day Saint women, young women. And he asked what the position of the church was, and David O. McKay says, no, that shouldn't be these crosses shouldn't be worn. That's a Catholic form of worship. And, yeah, so it, again, was associated with Catholicism. And if you go back into David O. McKay's journals, even though he was very careful publicly regarding Catholicism, he had some very...
Hope your phone cut out there. And again, he had some very what?
David O. McKay had some negative views against the Catholic Church. Was one of the two great anti-Christ in the world. And he says Catholicism, or he says communism and that church. Hmm. So
it's a fascinating thing to me to see kind of this history of it from the beginning, where we were like, hey, you know what? We have crosses and we're Christian, everybody, to then where we have to make this distinguishing thing where it's like, oh, no, you know what? We're different. We're different than everyone.
Right.
You know, don't lump us together. Do you feel like it's something that now in this kind of new age of Mormonism that we'll see it where it's just like, you know what, if it helps you worship Christ, do what helps you? Or do you feel like it'll be one of those things that remains taboo?
I think it'll change. I think that this new wave of assimilation that church is experiencing right now, I don't know. Now, I'm not saying that the church is going to start putting the cross on their buildings, but I think the taboo against the symbol, I think we'll find more Latter-day Saints using the cross, or at least wearing cross necklaces. But it's gonna have to happen in stages. There's rumor that, I don't know if it's true, but there's rumor that the temple in Rome is going to have a cross on the doors of the temple.
That would be interesting to find out for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll find that out, I guess, in a year or so.
You know,
when the temple is completed.
I think it's fascinating too, because I don't necessarily have any sort of problem with it. You know, I look at it as really just a form of worshiping Christ, and. The only time that I really take issue with it is when there are those huge, gaudy, you know, elaborate, you know, almost to the point of obnoxious kind of crosses. And to me, because then it just seems like it's not, you know, hey, I recognize Christ as my personal Savior, and He helps me, you know, every day in my walk, and this helps me, you know, remember Him. It's more like a boom, take this kind of thing.
Still there.
I got you, yeah.
Okay.
Cutting in and out, but that's fine. I mean, how have your feelings changed about this then from where you started on the master's thesis to today? Did I lose you again?
Okay, I'm here now.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, so in the early days of the church in 1830, the cross was something unacceptable to even Protestants or mainstream Protestants. And so I had assumed that because the cross was taboo among Protestants in the early days of the church, that this taboo creeped into Mormon culture just through the conversions of Protestants into the church.
Mm-hmm.
So I had assumed that the cross taboo had basically always existed in Mormon culture, but the evidence didn't confirm that. And so I guess that would be where my views have changed. I assumed that what other scholars have assumed, that because Protestants rejected the symbol, so did Mormons, and then Mormons went west and became isolated in Utah. And so when Protestants began accepting the symbol, Mormons didn't participate in that shift.
Hmm.
That seemed like a great theory.
Yeah.
Again, there really isn't any evidence to confirm. The evidence is to the contrary.
Let me ask you, how then in your mind, where you share that it's David O. McKay and kind of his personal feelings towards Catholicism, how are you able to balance that with your faith in his personal beliefs and in Revelation? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, a prophet have their own biases, and it doesn't. I don't struggle with it. It's to make mistakes and to struggle with the same sort of things that we do as members.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, there's no claim for Revelation as the basis of the taboo, and so I think. I don't know what to say right now.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. I think it's okay. And I think it's okay for Latter-day Saints to overlook the errors that David O. McKay may have had in his service.
Well, see, and I like where you're coming from, too, because I think that there are some people, though, that would get hung up on the fact that he was a prophet who said, hey, you know what, and Catholicism and this and that and whatever, and then they would hang their hat on that and choose to either not be able to deal with it or get offended or anything like that. And I think
right.
it's a very maybe progressive is the word for it, but very allowing point of view to be like, you know what? It's like what Elder Uchtdorf said in last general conference. There are mistakes.
Yeah. Now, if you assume that it's based on revelation because David O. McKay declared it as being the position of the church, then we run into other problems. Because when Spencer W. Kimball was called to be an apostle, he felt inadequate. He felt like he might not be able to fulfill the call. He didn't feel like he was good enough. And so he turned to God in prayer. And he's just pouring his heart to the Lord, and he says that he went out. He went for a hike, and he says that. What's interesting is as he describes in his journal this hike that he made up the hillside, he compares himself to the Savior and puts it in the context of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that he was praying for a sign, something that would confirm to his heart that he was indeed called to be a member of the Quorum of the Twelve. And he says in his journal that as he turned around the corner, he saw a cross that was formed by the limbs of a tree or something like that. And this was a sacred omen to him. And it was this experience that confirmed that he was indeed called to be an apostle for the church. And so weigh that, David O. McKay's.
Yeah, that's a pretty awesome example of the way, you know, someone in our time and in the latter days, if you will, using the example of a cross as for a positive thing. That's interesting. I wonder, why do you think it is that more stories like that aren't shared within the church and the cross?
I think it's because of the taboo. I think it's conveniently been eliminated from our lesson manuals because it's assumed that the cross is inappropriate.
Do you think, though, with the coming of the internet and Google and all this coming of newfound information, that it's something that we're just going to have to embrace and deal with head on?
Maybe. I think what will first happen in the church is that as members become more and more aware and more accepting of other people's ideas and beliefs, that no longer feel the need to...
Wait, back up a little bit. Your phone cut up just a little bit.
Okay. I think what will happen first is that new converts will be able to feel more comfortable about wearing cross, keeping heirlooms, and no longer feeling the need to pack them away or hide them. And that as people convert to the church, that there will become more of a prominence of the symbol just through conversions. And I think that it'll become more acceptable through that process.
Let's talk about your book a little bit more. It's called Banishing the Cross, The Emergence of a Mormon Taboo. It's available online. I'm looking at it at Amazon.com. Is there a Kindle version as well if people want to pick it up?
Not yet, unfortunately.
Come on, Michael. Let's get on it. you can buy it brand new for $17.96. I'm saving $2. And free shipping with orders over $35. I'll post a link with this episode. How big of a read is it?
It's, I believe, 179 pages.
So not terribly long. Do I have to be a master's or doctorate candidate to understand it, or is it pretty good, pretty easy read?
Told that it's pretty
good. And are there other books that are coming out from you soon?
No, not currently. I'm finishing my doctorate, so I'll be writing a dissertation that hopefully will be published as well.
What are you writing that for? Or what are you writing that about, I should say?
The topic is on the Christianization of Freemasonry. There's a movement in Joseph Smith's day to reinterpret Masonic ritual in ways that were distinctly Christian.
Hmm.
And I believe that Joseph Smith participated in the movement by making the Masonic ritual a sacrament.
Pretty fascinating subject. We did an episode of the Cultural Hall a while back about Masonry, and people are just absolutely fascinated. Have you, as part of the research with that, been to Masonic meetings, or are you yourself a Mason?
I'm not myself. I attended any meetings,
mm-hmm.
But I've gone through the archives in New York and the Grand Lodge over there, and yeah, I'll be doing my research soon here in the Bay Area at the Grand Lodge in San Francisco. And I have a number of friends and historians who are Masons that are helping me out with some research.
When could we look for something like that?
Maybe a few years. Maybe 3 years from now.
All right. Well, I mean, we got to give you some time, right? You got to get a doctorate.
Right.
Fine. Go and take care of that. And you've got kids. Okay. Take care of your kids. That's cool.
Yep.
But We appreciate you taking a few minutes here to talk about Banishing the Cross, the Emergence of a Mormon Taboo. And I really appreciate it because it's something we've talked a lot about. I'm no sort of researcher, but, you know, I am able to use Google and have tried to search and find various things about the cross and why it is that we don't do it. And I'm excited to get a copy of this book and check it out and be able to read more than what we were able to talk about in this. Is there anything that you feel like we glossed over that we should maybe go in a little bit more about?
No, I think you've covered it well. Thank you.
All right, you bet. It's Michael G. Reed, Banishing the Cross, The Emergence of a Mormon Taboo. Have you ever heard of the Cultural Hall before, Michael?
I have, yes.
How did you hear about it?
I just searched in the blog and through Facebook.
Nice. You can find us on iTunes if you'd like to subscribe. We would certainly appreciate it. That's for you and anyone else that's listening. I appreciate you taking a few minutes and wish you the best of luck. Be back in touch with me when that next book gets published. I'd be fascinated to talk with you about it.
Okay. I'm a little distracted right now. Sorry, man.
Oh, you're fine. And then hopefully, if this goes pretty well, which I feel like it will, maybe we can have you go back on after I've had a chance to read it and I can go a little further in depth.
Okay.
All right. Okay, go be distracted by whatever it is.
All right, take care.
Talk to you later. You bet. Bye. Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast. Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's a very special episode of The Cultural Hall. On the phone from Cincinnati, Ohio, and also from the Religion News Service and author of The Twible. We'll get into what that is because it just sounds like a weird thing. It's Jan Reese. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
How's weather in Cincinnati this morning? Okay.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Actually, thanks for asking, but, you know, we persevere. We're Ohioans. I'm sure you Utahans have a similar sense of fate.
Yeah, typically from about December until, what, March? Cincinnati weather just kind of sucks, yeah?
I'm afraid so, yes.
Though, I'll say this is what I know about Cincinnati, Ohio, having had the opportunity to go there one time. I sang in, like, three different cathedrals when I was there, so beautiful old kind of churches. I remember that. And then who was it that was mayor of your guys' city? Not Rivera. It was...
I don't even want to tell you. It was Jerry Springer.
Yeah, Jerry Springer was the mayor of Cincinnati. And that... Oh, and the Cincinnati airport is not actually in the state of Ohio. Those are the three things that come to my mind when I think of Cincinnati.
That is true. The Cincinnati airport is in Kentucky. Now, that is something we would like to claim, whereas the Creation Museum, which is in Kentucky and tells people that it's in Cincinnati, is something that we would be really happy to just let people think is in Kentucky.
I love it. Let's talk about you for a second. Tell me, are you a lifer, a member of the church, or are you a convert?
I'm a convert. I have just passed my 20th anniversary as a member of the church, and so that was in September. Been 20 wonderful years. I have loved being a Mormon. I grew up in a family where religion was considered very suspect, and my only exposure in my early childhood was when my mom would take us to Quaker meeting. But apart from that, we really had no organized religion. And then when I was in high school, I got involved in the Presbyterian church. Didn't really discover Mormonism until a bit later.
How did we get you?
Well, it's a long story, but so when I was 11, you know, I grew up in Western Illinois, so not far from Nauvoo. And when I was 11, I was in this college for kids thing in the summertime. And one of the classes that was being offered, these little 2-week classes, was called Nauvoo and the Mormons, which was taught by a history teacher. And so my first exposure to Mormons actually was when I was taking this history class as a kid. I thought it was fascinating. You know, and the fact that all of this had occurred just right up the road was amazing to me. So at the end of the class, we all took a field trip for a day to Nauvoo and to Carthage. Now, again, it took me, what was it? That was 11. I was 23 when I joined the church, so another 12 years. But certainly the seeds were planted, I guess.
College for Kids sounds like a super nerdy thing. Was that the deal?
It was a little bit nerdy, and it's funny looking back on that now because childhood has changed so much. Like, we would ride our bikes down there every morning and then come home in the afternoon and have lunch with our friends, and kids had so much more independence than they do now. I'm kind of astonished at how everything is so carefully organized and supervised with kids today. We didn't tell anybody where we were going, you know, in the afternoon. We just, whatever.
Do you think it's just kind of ridiculous like I do a little bit?
Yeah, well, there's only so much that we can protect our kids from. And I think that the notion that we have that the world is so much more dangerous now is true in perhaps some ways and very untrue in other ways. But it's the untrue parts of childhood actually being safer than it has in the past. Those stories don't seem to get told. I had a friend post on Facebook. She lives in a suburban subdivision in Arizona, a very safe neighborhood, and she let her 7-year-old ride her bike on the sidewalk just in their subdivision, and her daughter was brought home by a police officer who chastised my friend and said, you know, you can't let your child go out on a bike alone. I just thought, wow, things have changed so much.
You know, it's interesting, too, because there's nothing like a good scare from someone who might kidnap you to teach you to be more careful.
Yeah. I guess so.
But yeah, that story to me just sounds ridiculous. That unfortunately not what we had you come in to talk about, but I do, you know, we never know where this is going to end up. I want to talk about the Twible.
Great.
This just barely came out, what, in the last month?
Yes, it came out in the beginning of November, I think November 8th. So it has been a month now.
I think it's an absolutely hilarious idea. I mean, share with people what the Twible is and kind of where it came from.
Well, thank you for saying that it's hilarious. I appreciate that. The Twible is a 4-year project that I've been doing on Twitter. So in 2009, I started to tweet out a chapter of the Bible every day, starting with Genesis 1. And because there are 1,189 chapters of the Bible, it took more than 3 years. And the concept there is twofold. One is that it's a humor project. This mm-hmm. is an entertainment project. You know, it's more than just a summary, but it has a sort of cheeky perspective. If you enjoy reading The Onion or watching The Colbert Report, you'd probably really love The Twible. If you find those kinds of humor offensive, you might not want to check this out.
It is disrespectful. So, I can't believe that I read some of the comments like that online about the Twible, and it's just like, you guys are missing the point. Missing the point entirely.
Well, it's, yeah, there has been some pushback, and in one case, right from the beginning, right when I started tweeting out Genesis, I got a little bit of pushback about this part of Genesis that happens twice, where Abraham tells someone that Sarah is his sister, and then allows that man to have some sort of relationship with Sarah, which results in Abraham becoming more wealthy, which I called pimping out. You know, I'm sorry for the language, but I wonder if what that person objected to was that she just didn't know that was in the Bible at all. I mean, not only does it happen twice with Abraham, but it then is repeated in the next generation with Isaac, who does this with Rebecca. So it's an offensive story to think about a biblical patriarch that we are taught to emulate and think of as a man of faith possibly doing something that is not really what we would consider to be moral. It's troubling stuff. So I just want to point out that the Twible's not for everyone, but for the people who do resonate with it and want to see sort of the second part of the project, which is giving an overview of the entire Bible, you know, not just picking and choosing the parts that we think are particularly relevant to life today mm-hmm. or that are particularly relevant to condemning our enemies or, you know, all of the uses to which we put the Bible, but who want to get a big picture, bird's eye view of the whole thing. Then I think it's a really good way. I just had a pastor actually order 20 copies of the book wholesale for his confirmation class. So
oh, cool.
8th and 9th grade students. I know. I thought that was awesome. So that he wants them to have this big picture of the Bible and to not be intimidated by the Bible. I think a lot of us are looking at it as this text that is so far removed culturally and historically that it's just tough to understand some of what's going on.
Well, and I like that that person gets upset. And then you're like, no, it's in there. And they go, oh, I guess I didn't know that was in there. You know, like
actually, she didn't write back, so I'm not sure what her response was. But that has happened with some other people. I have a friend here who in Cincinnati in my ward here who is, you know, a little more conservative than I am, but we're really good friends. And when I first started tweeting this, she said a couple of times she would turn to the Old Testament because she was just sure that whatever I'd put in the Bible was into the tweet was not in the actual Bible. And then she'd look it up and say, oh, my goodness, that actually is in the Bible. Huh.
Did you ever throw any Easter eggs in there for people that know the Bible really well, where you're throwing in things that aren't in there that people always give credit to being in the Bible? Like the, you know, Jesus never said it would be easy, but he did say it would be worth it.
Oh, you know, I should have thought to do that. No, I didn't. There are no Easter eggs to speak of, but there are a lot of references to popular culture, everything from Pride and Prejudice to Doctor Who to Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, you know, all of those things, because I'm looking for ways to help people understand the Bible according to our lexicon, the ways that we think about life today are you know, very influenced by popular culture. So like in a psalm, for example, that's wishing harm upon one's enemies, there's a whole class of psalms that does this. I used words from The Princess Bride where he says, I will fight my enemy to the pain and leave him wallowing in freakish misery forever. You know, that's something that if you are of a certain generation, you're going to see that as a reference and think, oh, okay, that's what a psalm of imprecation does.
I love it. I'm just reading a couple here. I'm sorry. I should.
No, great.
the Genesis 26 is like father, like son. Isaac mimics, she's my sister. Trick to pimp out wife Rebecca again results in riches. We never learn. I just, the way that you put some of these things just makes me laugh. I apologize.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's challenging to even try to summarize the Bible in 140 characters or less on Twitter, let alone to sort of have a point of view and try to be funny, try to be entertaining. So I appreciate that. Thanks.
Do you get a lot of people, you said some pushback as far as the book, but you also do a lot of writing for the Religion News Service. Do you get a lot of people who kind of contest you in some of the things that you write there, or do you more or less just kind of report what's going on?
Well, it's a blog. It's personal opinion. I'm not a journalist. I'm not formally trained as a journalist. And so, yes, this is my opinion. Obviously, I read and I do some research, but I'm not a reporter, and the blog represents my opinion and is, you know, not the product of Religion News Service, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as pushback, do I ever get, only every single day, which is great. I think that's wonderful. A blog is supposed to be a conversation starter, and sometimes the conversation is pretty passionate. Sometimes it gets fairly heated. I do think that there's a class of person that goes online kind of looking for an argument. It's a sensibility that I find a little hard to understand. You know, I don't go to blogs that I know I'm going to disagree with and troll them and then comment repeatedly again and again, try to hammer a point home. It's hard for me to understand people who have time and energy to have that contentious of a life. But, you know, that's their life.
I like that you call trolls a class of people. There's that, you know, like you're trying to be very diplomatic about it, but you know, it is. It's people that troll around, and that's all they do is, oh, I'm gonna, you know, get this fired up. I'm gonna say these purposely inflammatory things to get people fired up here. What do you think of the things that you write about? What are the things that are most divisive?
Oh, certainly women.
Yeah, they are so divisive. Seriously. Oh, you mean within the church? I
guess. Well, women are probably, you know, divisive as well. Women have strong opinions on every side, just like men. And so, yes, I would say that feminist issues are certainly a hot-button thing in Mormonism right now. That's an issue that's close to my heart. I'm not going to stop writing about it just because someone says that he's offended. So I'm sorry that he's offended, but that's not actually my watch.
So where do you come down on it then? Are you one that believes that men and women should have the priesthood?
I do. Yes, I do. I think that, you know, society runs, as far as I can see, so much better when women and men share responsibility together and they are both involved in all aspects of decision making. You know, I don't want women to serve on juries solely for the purpose of having women serve on juries. I want women to serve on juries because I think that justice is served far more often when a jury represents the people who are being judged. So, too, with the priesthood, I think that the priesthood will flourish even when all parties are part of it and consulted about the major decisions before us. You know, it's such an exciting time right now to be a Latter-day Saint,
mm-hmm.
where other religions are struggling in many ways just to retain interest. I wouldn't say that we are exploding in membership, but we are more than holding steady. I would say that we are thriving, and that's fantastic in the current climate and with the rise of the unaffiliated so-called nuns, N-O-N-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's up to about 16% of our population. So when you think about that, which is a huge change, it's more than double than a decade ago, to have Mormonism still claiming so much loyalty and joy on the part of its adherents, I think that is tremendously exciting, and I think it's happening because there is something there. There is a core and a beauty that people respond to.
Do you think it's something that'll change in your lifetime?
About women and the priesthood?
Yeah.
Well, I actually blogged about this. I, because of deep personal searching, went to the Lord many years ago with this question of, will women ever have the priesthood? And I received an answer through personal revelation that, yes, women would have the priesthood and that I would not live to see it. So I don't know what that means, when this might happen. I do believe that it will happen. I do believe that it will be a beautiful thing, and that people who are, for whatever reason, afraid of that kind of sharing of authority, I think they'll come around. I do.
Yeah. What else? So women and the priesthood, we know that's pretty divisive. What else do people seem to get pretty fired up about?
Oh, you know, here's one thing that I am always surprised by. If I post something about Mormon worship, worship is a concern of mine that I have written about several times, and about sacrament meeting, the structure of it, the lack of, I feel, okay, this is again just my opinion, but what I see as a lack of innovative worship forms or creativity in worship, and a very prescribed musical style, for example,
mm-hmm.
or just the passive reception of talk. That is not often the most, it's ironic because we're such a heavily participatory religion that we don't have a more participatory form of worship.
Hmm.
We are there and we are sitting and we are in sacrament meeting or in general conference, and we will eventually throughout the year at some point have our turn to get up and speak as well, which is different from many other religions. But there is not, other than that, a lot of involvement, and involvement in worship is actually what gets people fired up over the long haul, and what helps new converts have a stake in what's going on and helps them to stay, to stick around. And we don't have that. I would really like to see us develop that. So this is a long answer to your question, but a few years ago when I had first started blogging, one of my posts was about what I called boring sacrament meetings. And yes.
Yeah. So and people were upset, huh?
People were very upset, yes, although actually I should say the results were very polarized. Some people were extremely upset, and I was surprised by the level of vitriol. My mother, who was not Mormon, but read my blog every day, because she said to me in some sort of concern, she said, "Mormons are mean, you know, like, I never would have thought this, that Mormons could be so." People will truly say things to you online
that they would never say to your face.
They would never dream of saying to your face. And, you know, I think that it should be a rule for all of us that we would be the same person in person or in our virtual life, and that offer up objections and rational arguments without personal accusations or threats, which has happened. So,
threats on your life?
No, thank goodness. Not okay. Threats on my life. Threats on reporting me to my bishop. And he has actually received, apparently, several letters from concerned individuals about me, you know, and it's funny how they seem to assume that he doesn't know that I'm a blogger.
Wait, she does this? I had no idea.
Of course he knows. Yes, we've had very excellent conversations about it. He's an awesome guy. But anyway, so he's apparently gotten a couple of these letters. Are just sure that he must not know what I'm saying.
Because if he knew, you wouldn't do it anymore.
Apparently. I don't know. So yes, I would say sacrament meeting, that was more divisive than I would have expected. On the other side of that, though, were a whole host of people who have said things about, yeah, this is why I don't go to church. You know, why should I bother just to go and to sit there and to listen to hymns that we sing at halftime? And, you know, we are, yeah, Yeah. Often people feel that sacrament meeting is not relevant or that it's something to be endured. And it's funny because even some of the comments from people who were objecting to my objection would say things like, sacrament meeting teaches us patience. You know, sacrament meeting teaches us to not have to be entertained all the time. And that is true. But is that really the best we can do, that we regard it as something to be endured, like building our Christian character to suffer through a stultifying event? That's terrible. Sacrament meeting can sometimes be, and has been in my experience, uplifting and wonderful and exciting and just human, wonderful.
Yeah, real is how I like to...
Real. Yeah.
You know, it's
fast
like we...
testimony meeting is actually my favorite meeting of the month because it is people talking about their lives.
Do you ever play Fast and Testimony Bingo?
No, tell me what that is.
We haven't made the bingo cards yet, but we joke around about it where... you know, you put all the things on there like tragic accident or health trouble or whatever. So it's a little irreverent, but as people get up and bear their testimonies, you get a cross out. You know, if they mention that they were saved from a terrible car accident, you can mark that off. Or, you know, you have
that. Oh, my gosh. This could be fun. You could also have a category for... my food storage saved me from blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So there's food storage and there's end of the world and there's, you know, veiled reference to political leaders and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Or and, not veiled.
Yeah. Yes. Or not at all veiled references to it. And then the thing is, though, as I've kind of played that in my head and waited, I'm like, okay, here we go. What else am I missing today? Okay, we haven't had one of these. It actually... helps me kind of be excited to hear what people are going to go. And then it's like, there we go. Got it. Bingo.
Check.
too much? Maybe a little irreverent.
Well, yes. I am also probably a little bit irreverent, as you can tell from the Twible itself. But one of the endorsements for the Twible was Phyllis Tickle, who said that it was an example of the reverence of irreverence. And I think that that is an important point. There's being irreverent, but then there's being irreverent because we know there's something better. You can be irreverent when you're sitting in sacrament meeting and thinking, oh my gosh, this talk, it could be so much better.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of that is that we could have a more reverent sacrament meeting if we did a few things differently.
What about a Twarman? Is there a Twarman coming?
Twarman, like a Book of Mormon?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, several people have asked me about that, and I...
Has anyone coined the phrase Twarman yet?
No. That's the first I've heard. I think you can totally claim that.
I'm copywriting it right now, so you'll have to get back in touch with me should you decide to do it.
All right, you reserve that domain name.
I'm on it.
So I have not done anything with the Twible Book of Mormon, and frankly, I don't know that our people are ready to go there. I think that Mormons can be a little bit more distant from the Bible as a work of Scripture, that they can deal with humor, they can deal with Song of Solomon not being an allegory, but actually being about sex, you know, for example. But that some of the things in the Book of Mormon are so sacred and our people feel so persecuted that we're really not ready for that. At least that's my sense.
No, I say go for it. I got your back.
Well, okay, I'll remember that when I have to call you up for the copyright information and the domain name, that you said you have my back.
Yeah,
so
no, I've got your back. You bet. I was trying to think of other ways to make like the Twoctrin and Covenants. I'm not sure that one plays as well.
I don't know.
I don't think I'm gonna reserve that domain name.
Okay. Twoctrin. Well, Twible was a pretty stupid name. You know, marketing experts will say that there are three things you're supposed to always do, and one of them is that you have a product name that everyone can just look at and know how to pronounce.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I totally failed, like epic fail on that score, because people look at it and they say, is that the Twibble?
Yeah.
On Twitter? Is it, you know, what is this about? So, Twible rhymes with Bible is a little bit abstract.
Religion News Service, where is that? Is that, that's not a Mormon-based thing, right? It's all sorts of different religions and you just happen to be a Mormon contributor?
Exactly, yes. We have... Jewish, evangelical, Christian, Muslim. So we have an atheist blogger. So far, we don't have anybody represent paganism, as far as I know. We just hired some new bloggers, and I'm not yet. But I used to blog for BeliefNet, and then in early 2012 came over to us, and it has been wonderful. I'm really pleased to be part of that. They take it very seriously. what we're having conversations about religion.
Let me ask you this. I ask questions of everyone who comes here into the Cultural Hall. First question I have is, have you ever listened to the Cultural Hall or heard of it?
I've heard of it, but no, I have not listened to a podcast, so I'm sorry.
Shame on you.
I guess, I know, I will walk the hall of shame now, and you can throw tomatoes.
It's actually just the Cultural Hall of Shame. And people just look at you as your shoes make way too much noise on the wood floor. The second thing is, do you have a calling in your ward right now?
I do. So in my ward, I'm in the primary. I've been in the primary for the last several years, and I'm the secretary officially.
Uh-huh.
But the way that works out in my ward is that everyone has multiple jobs. We are an urban congregation that struggles,
mm-hmm.
and we have very few people to fill a lot of roles. So I don't play the piano. That would be very helpful because we don't have a pianist. I do sometimes work as the chorister because we don't have a chorister typically, and one of the two members of the presidency will sometimes fill that role. Sometimes I'm the runner. Sometimes I'm the nursery leader. Sometimes I'm a, you know, last-minute substitute teacher. Sometimes, like yesterday, I was leading a teacher training for our few proud, chosen primary teachers. So, you know, where I live, everybody needs to be prepared to be flexible.
And in a way, I kind of like that as opposed to the one person who says, this is my job and that's all I'm doing and, you know, try and get me to do more, forget it, which you get in some wards here in Utah. If you could pick a calling for yourself, what would you pick?
Ooh, well, I loved working in young women's, actually. I did that for many years and thought that was fantastic. I love teenagers. I know some people think that's crazy.
It is.
But I love teenagers. And so I guess that would be fun, but primary is awesome. There is not a Sunday that goes by that one of the kids doesn't say something that cracks me up. And, hey, that never happens when I go to gospel doctrine class, you know. It's great to be with kids. And now my own daughter's in high school, so I don't have that sort of spontaneous kid stuff that happens on Sundays. I mean, I'm sure you can
Absolutely.
Think of a lot of related stories, yeah. It's good. I love the primary.
Although being in gospel doctrine and being a gospel doctrine teacher, though I may not laugh out loud, there isn't a Sunday that goes by when I teach that I don't laugh really hard at something someone says to me, and I just go, well, really? That thing? Okay, sure.
How are you feeling about teaching the Old Testament next year?
I am, you know, honestly, here's where I come down on that. I don't know the Old Testament, and I don't know how to make it relatable or interesting, so I love a challenge.
Great.
I just barely got into the calling, and I would have loved to teach the whole year on Doctrine and Covenants because I served my mission in Kirtland.
Cool,
and
really?
Yeah, so I would have loved that opportunity, but that was not the opportunity that was given me, so now I'm turning the other way and now looking forward to learning all about the Old Testament. And trying to make that something that people care about.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, if you ever need commentary recommendations, I now have a kajillion Old Testament commentaries and wonderful Bible study materials. So,
I'm hoping to just actually Skype you in on our lesson. So we'll see how that goes. Then the final question that I ask everyone who steps here in the Cultural Hall is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Ooh. My favorite part of my faith. I think the broad umbrella answer would be that Mormonism makes me a better person. I'm sure that there are many religions that could say that about, or that they feel that way about their own religion. But when I am feeling down about something happening in the church or what I see as the slow pace of changes that I've... In the long run, Mormonism is a faith that has made closer to God and brought a much better person than I would have been on my own. Better parent, a better colleague, a better editor, a better wife, and I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for that. And part of that is the formation that I think our religion expects of us through spiritual practice. I'm a firm believer in spiritual practices, even though if you've heard of my book, Flunking Sainthood, which is all about how I fail at different spiritual practices, I may not be very good at them, but the journey is the trying. The journey is not some elusive, successful destination where you put your stake down and you say, whew, you know, I've arrived. Whether it's Sabbath keeping or certainly prayer, these things are lifetime practices and probably then some. And I think we do a lot of those practices very well. We expect that people are going to have devotional lives that require time and sacrifice, but that as they progress in that journey, they will be becoming closer to God, becoming more like Cry, step by step.
I love it. Tell people where they can find you. Read your stuff.
Okay, well, The Twible is available on Amazon. It's actually, the Kindle version is on sale up until December 11th. And Religion News Service blog. My blog is called Flunking Sainthood.
It's just flunkingsainthood.com?
Well, actually, I'm not sure. Hang on just a second. I have to look it up. I probably should know that.
No, no, what come on. It's fine.
Okay, it's janareese.religionnews.com. And okay. Reese is R-I-E-S-S.
Thank you so much. Is it all right for us to call upon you in the future with some news stuff and just get your commentary on it?
Absolutely.
Well, then
I would be honored.
Then I insist that we do that. And in the meantime, I encourage you to check out an episode or two of The Cultural Hall. Tell your friends.
Thank you.
We love Ohioans, so we'd love to have you guys there. Hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body. And if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, you will be healthy enough to listen next week. And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.